This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us on the program in 30 minutes time to preview tomorrow evening's Jets-Flyers game, Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News is going to join us. He's in Toronto with the Flyers as the Flyers are playing in Air Canada Centre tonight against the Leafs. In 1 hour's time, at the top of the second hour, the general manager of the Calgary Flames, Brad Treliving, is going to join us. Brad just signed Bob Hartley to a new contract extension. We're going to talk to him about that. We're going to talk to him about the first 7 months as the Flames general manager. In the last hour of the show today, we're going to talk to Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North. As everybody does know, the Jets and the Wild are going to play a back-to-back home-and-home right after Christmas. So we're going to talk to Mike about the Minnesota Wild. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. And first and foremost, I say good afternoon to both Richie and Ezzy.
Yeah, what's going on, boys? Last Illegal Curve hockey show of the year, which is pretty crazy to say here with a couple of breaks coming up. But doing good. You're doing good?
I'm doing well as well. Richard, how about yourself?
You're doing well as well?
I'm doing well as well.
Yeah, no, Drew doing well, as he mentioned. Looking forward to the last show of 2014 here and an exciting game last night. And, exciting results, I think. I don't think that necessarily the gameplay itself was overly exciting, but the results, if you're a Jets fan, continue to be exciting because this team continues to win, regardless of who they have on the back end.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I mean, the last two periods yesterday were dull, and they were controlled by the Boston Bruins for the most part. But at the end of the 60 minutes, the only thing that mattered was that the Jets won the game 2-1. They continue to play successful hockey. I mean, smoke and mirrors maybe with that defense the way it currently is, but it doesn't matter as long as they keep putting 2 points in the bank, and as they've done so far this week against Buffalo on Tuesday, stepping up to some degree on Friday in competition against the Bruins, but this isn't the Boston Bruins of the last 5 years for the most part. You can see their struggles, and we'll talk about that as we break down the game. And then tomorrow night against the Philadelphia Flyers team that continues to struggle in the woeful Eastern Conference.
Well, Drew, you mentioned dull, and I think Paul Maurice after the game was saying, well, it's less dull and more simple. And I think you look at the situation that the Jets are in, and I don't think we've ever seen this before here. There's no question we haven't seen a situation where the top four defensemen have gone down, but you don't see many NHL teams that have their top four defensemen go down, and you're in a situation where, because now there's a roster freeze, your only option, you've got Julien Briette who's there to if he needs to, but you have a situation where they're going to have to get by with this group of seven defensemen here and the starting six defensemen. And I thought, Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy did a really good job last night playing a very simple game and limiting mistakes. And it was not a very entertaining game, but you got to give the Jets credit for coming out, scoring the first goal again early, and dominating that first period. I thought the Jets could have been up 2-0 or 3-0. They got some power play opportunities that they couldn't convert on, but after that, I mean, that's what you're going to have to do. This to me felt like a playoff game. They were playing like this, and I don't mean a playoff game in the sense that that's what's at stake. I mean just the way that you protect the lead. And I think this year, that's one of the main differences that we've seen. In addition to what everybody knows, this team is playing better defensively. Look at the Jets are third in the NHL in goals against. It's really incredible. And you have to give the coaching staff credit. You have to give credit to the players for executing the system. But, I mean, this is a situation where you have Adam Pardy and Paul Postma playing on your second pair. Everybody's been elevated. And I think they did a nice job yesterday, Charlie Huddy especially, kind of distributing the minutes, Richie, evenly. You don't have anybody there that can play, and I know Dustin Byfuglien has played 27, 28 minutes uh, over the last couple of weeks several times, and obviously he left with that injury towards the end.
27:04 last night for the Jets.
Right, and that's a function, and Ben Sherratt's minutes were less because Buff obviously gets to play on the power play and all that. But, you know, you got to give them credit here. It's difficult to explain how they're doing this. Sure, the Boston Bruins might not be the Boston Bruins, but, I mean, this team has lost one game in regulation in, what, the last 11 or 12?
Yeah.
It's really incredible, and they continue to execute, and it's everybody buying in. I thought the forwards as well deserved a lot of credit for the way that they played yesterday. So, again, it's a great win, and you know, we seem to be waiting for the collapse to happen here, but it hasn't yet. And I guess the true test is going to be, as you said, the two Minnesota Wild games and the Chicago game, because I think those are going to be tougher games as opposed to Philadelphia, for example, which is a complete mess.
Absolutely. And the Jets, you know, like you said there, Ezzy, in discussing the game yesterday, the Jets got off to a very good start, taking the play to the Boston Bruins for the first 20 minutes. The Bruins looked like a team, you know, that was playing their third game in four nights, but that's no excuse for the way they came out. And the Jets took it to them. The last two periods were a little more haggard for the Jets in their performance. But, you know, the success, the getting the one goal lead to start the game in the first period, you know, if it wasn't for Tuukka Rask, the Jets were probably going to be, you know, the Jets should have had a more than a one goal lead.
Yeah, I agree with that, Drew. I mean, Rask was very good in the first period, and the Jets had some opportunities they weren't able to capitalize on. And it didn't come back to haunt them because Boston really doesn't generate a ton of offense. It's one thing you really see from the Bruins is they control the puck. They don't necessarily get many chances from that puck control. And that's something they're going to need to address. And with the cap situation there, and I'm not sure how they're going to be able to address that. But, no, I mean, and the Jets are doing this, you know, surprising to me, personally. I just, you look at the roster, and you don't necessarily know how. I think Paul Maurice right now is for sure one of the top three coaches, in top three for the Jack Adams in terms of coach of the year, because he's doing this, you know, they're in these games too, and I know they've kept the game simple and all that, but you have to have a buy-in. Again, it's not, the players don't care if it's aesthetically pleasing, but and I don't think ownership or anybody else does either, to get in results. And for that, Maurice needs to get credit, and he's done a great job so far.
Absolutely. Let's get into the goals last night. The Jets opened the scoring at the 3:12 mark of the first period. Evander Kane with his sixth of the year assist to Grant Klitsam and the newcomer, Jay Harrison.
In on him, Halaschuk, freed up now by Kane. Back toward the line here for Harrison. Up top for Klitsam with a shot goal. Defended, but they score! Evander Kane! Winnipeg!
You know, it's ironic that the goal that the Jets scored in the first period was one probably that Tuukka Rask probably shouldn't, it shouldn't have gone through him. You know, the puck squeaks through him on the point shot from Klitsam, and Evander Kane is, you know, he's got a nose for the net, and he's right there, and he pounces on the loose puck and puts it in.
It's one of those goals where everybody on the ice contributed to it, which is rare, actually. You know, you have a battle behind the net of Halaschuk and Lowry working hard. Lowry throwing around his body last night a bunch. Winning the battles in the corner. The puck coming to Kane. Kane making the pass cross ice to Harrison, who's on the left side on the blue line of the offensive blue line, who quickly makes a pass over to Klitsam. The Jets have been doing that really well in that they receive a pass. One of the defensemen receives a pass and immediately sends it to the other defenseman. And what happens there is you're taking down the shot blocking ability of the other team because the lanes are switching. And the Jets have done a really nice job of that. That's another example of that. Harrison's pass to Klitsam, quick shot. The puck squirts through. And Kane, who makes the pass to Harrison, follows the puck to the net, the old Edmonton Oilers strategy of the 80s, and he gets the rebound.
As opposed to the 2010s, which the strategy is to lay down.
But yeah, and Kane comes in and gets the rebound, Drew. So he follows the puck to the net, and that's what happens. So you go to the net, and good things happen. And it's the same thing for the Jets' second goal, which we'll talk about in a little bit here. You go to the net. They're not pretty goals. They don't have to be, though.
And that was, as you just mentioned, Richie, that was a quintessential crashing the net goal. And I thought that, you know, the Boston Bruins defense looked very average yesterday. And on that goal, mm-hmm. I thought the pairing of Matt Barkowski and Dennis Seidenberg didn't look good. You know, Richie mentioned Lowry. I thought Lowry was excellent. and he has been for quite some time now, but they had a lot of problems with the speed of that line. And then you throw in a guy like Halaschuk is a speedy little guy, and you throw in Kane and Lowry, both guys that like to play the physical style of game, and that was a game where they just couldn't handle them in front there. And you had Lowry on Matt Barkowski there, and yeah, that was just a nice goal, and really it was just outpowering the other team. And I thought that, you know, I think, you know, Dougie Hamilton, good defenseman, and Zdeno Chara may have lost a step. It's still a very good top pairing, but after that, I mean, you take Johnny Boychuk out of the lineup, who's on the Islanders now. You take Adam McQuaid, an underrated defenseman, in my opinion, out of the lineup. The defense is not what it used to be, Drew, and, you know, back in the days, even with Andrew Ferentz and all that. But
I completely agree with that. They're certainly not as tough as they used to be. You know, Miller's a tough guy, but you're certainly not as tough as you used to be. Hamilton doesn't play tough. And if you can gauge him, he'll come back. He doesn't really play tough, though. I mean, Chara's obviously mean, but again, you got to get there, and he's still a good defenseman. Is he the most dominant defenseman in the league anymore? No.
Yeah.
But some of the other guys get pushed around. You'll see that in the second goal, too. They get pushed around. So I agree with Ezzy there. I mean, there's problems there on the back end, and then there's a problem up front in terms of creating offense. It's hard for them. They can create it. They can't finish it. That's the biggest issue. And we spoke to Jack Edwards about that on Wednesday. I mean, they don't have the guys who can finish. There was an opportunity earlier in the, I think it was the second period, if I recall correctly. Krejci passes the puck out front, and
Louis Erickson.
It wasn't Erickson. It was a different Boston player. I forget one of their younger
players.
Well,
then the one I'm talking about, with Erickson, was in a prime shooting position. And he just did nothing with it.
But this was literally a pass to what would have been a Ginla or Horton in years past with the lineup as they do with Krejci and, you know, Krejci and Lucic and Ginla, for example, last year. And that puck on one of those guys' sticks would have been in the net. And in this case, with different players there now, it's not. And that's a big difference to me.
The Bruins were able to tie it up 4:49 into the second period. Torrey Krug gets his sixth of the year, assist to Chris Kelly and Carl Soderberg.
Maybe they like the tape job after all. Jets win the draw. They will shoot it in. Rims around the boards. Top of the dash. Here it goes in toward the corner. After it goes Krug. Trying to shake off a check. Reverses to the near side. And put it up for Chris Kelly. He gets pressured there. Put it back in behind the net. After it goes Miller. Miller up around the boards. Jets try to keep it in and can't. Kick picked up by Soderberg. He's got a 2-on-1 with Kelly. Soderberg across the line for Kelly. Moved in. Let a shot go. Stop. Rebound. They score. Torrey Krug coming in late and activating. And it's 1-1. On Krug's goal to tie it here in the second.
Bad pinch by Adam Pardy, and then
I don't think that's a bad pinch, Drew.
Andrew Ladd loses his guy when he covers for Pardy.
Right, that's more the issue, I think. Pardy's part of the game plan of the Jets is to stay, especially with their defense the way it is. You don't want to always be backing up. You want to pressure in. So Pardy pressures in. The puck bounces. And I mean, even on Ladd here, Ladd is back to support. So my issue is not even with, and this is kind of a bad bounce here, because Andrew Ladd, just if people didn't see the goal, Pardy pinches down the offensive blue line, okay, on the boards. Ladd is where he's supposed to be, rotating back. The problem is the puck bounces, and Ladd kind of loses it, and Soderberg grabs it and goes around Ladd, and then comes in on the 2-on-1. So, you know, sure, to me, I don't have an issue with Pardy going there. And Ladd is basically where he's supposed to be. They just kind of lose the puck, a little bit of bad luck. Then the puck comes down on the 2-on-1, and it's Kelly and Soderberg. I thought Soderberg was good last night. Soderberg makes the play. Kelly, rebound. Hutchinson makes a nice save. But Torrey Krug is a good skater. He comes down the ice. Pardy and Wheeler are right with him. And Pardy kind of jumps, loses the puck a bit. That's, you know, that was one play on the rebound. And Wheeler, one of those guys, and that's what the coach would be saying, one of you guys has to get that guy in front. You know, and again, Pardy and Wheeler, big boys. Krug's small. Be a little mean. Even take a penalty. And you got to get the rebound there.
Yeah, and hell of a save by Michael Hutchinson on the 2-on-1 initially.
You got to mention that, Drew. It was a very good save, but you got to give them credit here. Carl Soderberg, it's a great turnover for him. I guess takeaway, if you want to call it that. And yeah, it's an unfortunate bounce. You don't want to make too much out of it. I mean, Ladd was in an awkward position, and Pardy doesn't make a good play there. But yeah, as Richie mentioned, you know, you have a 2-on-1, and Torrey Krug is the trailer, and he does a good job of getting up into the play and burying the rebound. I thought Boston really was the better team in that second period, and I thought, you know, as we'll get into now, I thought it was, you know, almost miraculous that the Jets came out of that period with a 2-1 lead.
Sure, Boston was the better of the two teams in the second and the third period, outshooting the Jets 27-11 cumulatively in the second and third. Although a lot of those shots I didn't think were really prime scoring chances.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they still controlled the play, but I agree there weren't some incredible scoring chances. And when they had good chances, they didn't really have it to the guys that they wanted necessarily, right?
Sure. Matthew Perreault gives the Jets the lead back at the 19:37 mark of the second period, his fifth of the year, assist to Bufflin and Scheifele.
Hill played out towards center ice, knocked down by Klitsam. He will play it on the far side for a little. He'll snap it in high around the glass of the dashing board. Goes into the corner for Wheeler. Trying to center out in front. Perreault's banging away at it. Wheeler's got it again. In behind the Boston net to the side of the goal. Back toward the line for Bufflin. Shooting. Scores! Dustin Bufflin on a broken play again. Guys were heading to the bench. Wheeler did all the work. And the Jets, with 23 seconds remaining in this second period, have regained the lead. It's 2-1, Winnipeg.
Good things happen when you put the puck on net.
And that goal was I was in the Bruins dressing room after the game, and Tuukka Rask said he didn't see it at all.
Yeah.
And originally they gave the goal to Dustin Bufflin, and it did go off of Matthew Perreault. I think actually you could see Matthew Perreault on the ice. He was telling the ref that, oh no, that hit me. That's my goal. Yeah. But you can't take that goal too seriously, really, in the sense that it was putting the puck on net and a fortuitous rebound, Drew, and it was an ugly goal in an ugly winning goal in an ugly game.
Yeah, it was. That's a good way to put it. See, Wheeler, you know, controlling the puck down low, working hard there, using his size, getting to Scheifele, who moved the puck to where it needed to be, and there was an open spot with Bufflin. I thought the Bruins were running around in their own zone here. And then when you put the puck on net, it's, as you mentioned, Drew, it's just a ton of people in front. Perreault kind of speaks to Boston's, I think, lack of depth here a little bit, too, is, you know, Perreault's in front, and Barkowski's trying to move Perreault. Barkowski's not moving anybody, and Perreault's not exactly big. And so Perreault's able to, instead of getting boxed out of the front of the net, which, you know, Boston, generally your defensemen are going to want to do there, or they're going to front. In this case, Barkowski's unable to handle Perreault, which speaks to an issue in terms of size and strength, and the puck goes off Perreault in the net.
I think the big story, Drew, and I should say that I do think the Boston Bruins will be a playoff team. I think they're going to have some problems in that Eastern Conference with some of the better teams like Tampa, Montreal, Pittsburgh, especially if they play them in the first round. But that Bruins team has come into the MTS Center in the previous 3 years and really pushed the Jets around, and that's not the case anymore.
Well, here's what Claude Julien, before we go to break, here's what Claude Julien had to say after the game, the Bruins head coach. We passed up so many shot opportunities and looked for cute plays, Claude Julien said. He also said that at the end of this three-game road trip, they could have come back with 5 points out of six, and if they're happy with getting 3 points, they're going to be on vacation in the beginning of April. So that's an unhappy head coach there in Boston.
It is, Drew, and I understand that. I mean, the Bruins don't have that scoring, as we mentioned, but the style of play that the Jets are playing, it should feed into what the Bruins want to play, right? If you can't score a ton, you want to be playing games like you did yesterday.
Right.
You just want to be winning them, of course. So I think he's saying we were not keeping the game simple. We're overcomplicating it, and the talent level we have can't be doing that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to tomorrow night and the Jets and the Flyers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Some really cool pictures.
20 minutes after the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The Jets and the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow night at MTS Center, an 8 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290 and TSN 3. And yet again, the Jets are going to be facing an opponent that is below them in the standings. The Flyers really struggling this year so far, 11-14-6, heading into tonight's game in Toronto for the Flyers. 28 points, 13th in the terrible Eastern Conference. So that just goes to show you how much the Flyers have been struggling. They're now without goaltender Steve Mason for the next two games, as he injured himself in practice yesterday. And Rob Zepp, who is a 10-year veteran, mainly in Europe, is going to be playing, was called up from the minors to play for the Flyers in goal. You know, what's the biggest problem with the Flyers so far this year, guys?
I think there's a lot of problems, Drew, and we'll talk to Frank Saravalli about them when we have him on next segment, but this is a team, in my opinion, that still has two top 20 forwards, maybe even top 10 forwards in Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek, and they've been excellent this year, both at the top of the points leaders list there. But to me, after that, there's a significant fall off. Mm-hmm. I think you've got some other players on that team that I really like. I've always been a Wayne Simmonds fan. Really like Sean Couturier and Matt Reed there on that third line. And, you know, Couturier, I think, is a guy that factors into the long-term future of the Philly Flyers. I think he's got 1 year left on his contract after this year. But I think, you know, this team has struggled in goal. They've struggled on defense. I think you've got an aging defense there that's pretty overpaid, Richie. It's a team that I think still has, if you look at their forwards, and I think Philly and Boston to me have always kind of been, over the years, examples of forward depth in the NHL. And earlier, Richie, depth on defense, but both these teams, I think, are struggling on defense. And I think you look at the forward depth, and I mentioned, you know, the Lions, and a guy like R.J. Umberger hasn't worked out, and Vinny LeCavalier, mm-hmm. they've tried to trade him. He's been in and out of the lineups, but this is a team that can still score. But that defense looks slow, Richie, and, you know, it's a team that, you know, I picked to make the playoffs at the beginning of the season, and I thought they could get in there again, but there's just too many question marks with this team. They're inconsistent. They give up a lot of leads, and, you know, I think you're in a situation right now, if you're Ron Hextall, and you're saying, okay, what can I get for some of these players? And you have to start looking at rebuilding this thing, because the R.J. Umberger trade was kind of made for salary reasons, but also to kind of give them a little bit of an offensive boost and all of that, but you have a team right now that's, where are they going? I'm not sure where this team is going. I think they're 8 points out of the playoffs. I'd be surprised if they can make that up. It's tough to make those points up. I mean, now you're talking 32 games, but I mean, I guess they can still get in, but to me, it's a team that you have question marks in goal and on defense. I think the forwards, it's a pretty good group of forwards, but yeah, it's a team that has struggled big time this year.
I mean, what are expectations here at Philly? I don't think they're that high.
You don't think that the Flyers' expectations were that high?
No, I don't think the outside expectations for the Flyers were very high, to be honest. This is who's playing in their ice time on the back end. Mark Streit, Braden Coburn, Michael Delzato, who didn't have a contract till the end of the summer. Andrew McDonald, Nick Schultz, Nicholas Grossman, Luke Shen. You're not winning the National Hockey League with that defense.
No. I agree. They weren't going to be a cup favorite, but they probably thought they were a playoff team. They did not expect to be.
Maybe they thought they'd be a playoff team. I didn't think they'd be a playoff team.
They did not expect to be that low in the Eastern Conference at this point.
Right, Drew. That's fair, and I agree with that. And they, you know, 0-5 in the shootout doesn't help, and things like that. But if you want from a perspective of what is this team has core talent in Voracek and Giroux. They can score. And they have a size, you know, maybe they're not as mean as they once were. You know, you lose guys like Cardinal, you trade guys like Cardinal and things like that. But how do you succeed in the National Hockey League if you can't skate well enough on the back end, you can't defend well enough, and you don't have great goaltending? I mean, what do you expect? The reason Florida's ahead of them, it's not a big difference in goal differential, but the reason Florida's ahead of them is they got Luongo. They got guys like Campbell, skated out of their own zone, Ekblad, move the puck. And their leading ice time guy on the back end is Mark Streit. He can't skate that well. Not a good defender. Move the puck nice, but he's got flaws. Braden Coburn, I like Braden Coburn, has a tough year, but he can skate, move the puck. He's a good player. I think he'll get interest on the wire if he's going to be shopped over the next, you know, couple months here. But Michael Delzato, I mean, you have a bunch of guys here who are giving up a ton on offense or defense, and, you know, you don't have these complementary combos now. This is not like you're throwing out really good offensive defense with really good defensive defense. When there's flaws in all these guys. And so, how do you succeed then? If you're going to put a really slow guy, the really fast guy, and one guy's not very good on defensively, and the other guy doesn't really add much offensively, you know, certain teams that'll be a package that you'll see a lot on an NHL team. For example, you're going to put your defensive guy with your offensive guy.
True, but they're not as
flawed. Yeah, but they're not as flawed as the guys we're talking about here. So conceptually, you know, I can see what they're trying to do on the back end. They're going to try to disperse ice time more evenly because nobody's really that good. But the coach, what's the coach going to do here? What's Craig Berube going to do? He can't play an open style anymore like they did under Laviolette because A, they can't move the puck up quick enough to their forwards. And B, if they do that and they leave their forward defensemen on an island, a lot of them can't skate well enough to defend. And they can't make good enough decisions to defend. So, I mean, we're going to look at the coach. We're going to ask Frank Saravelli about the coach here. And I'm going to be, if I'm the coach, I'm looking at the players being like, I don't know. I mean, who do I got to trust?
I think this Philadelphia Flyers defense is a mess, as Richie mentioned. I think the team has kind of, I think the losing the identity is thrown around a little bit too much in cliches these days. I think it's important that for a team to have an identity, but I think this team isn't the same hard-working team. I think this team is not as good as 5-on-5 as they used to be. Philadelphia Flyers rely too much on the power play. They've got a good power play.
Fifth in the league, if I'm not mistaken.
Fifth in the league.
You know why? Because you don't need to worry about getting the puck out of your own zone now.
You've got Giroux and Voracek. Any team is taking those guys, and then you've got a guy like Wayne Simmons down low, you know, getting the dirty goals in front of the net. I think he's got 8 power play goals this year. Something like that. And, I mean, it's a team that 5-on-5 is not very difficult to play. The Flyers aren't difficult to play against, and that used to be something where you'd play the Philadelphia Flyers, and they were tough to play against. They were big, they were fast. And it's not that team. And as Richie mentioned, too, you know, you signed Steve Mason to the contract, and I didn't have a problem with it at the time. But, you know, he's injured now, and he's struggled. So, I mean, it's a team right now that is really kind of lost. That's the word I would use for the Philadelphia Flyers. Because as I mentioned, I think they have a lot of great players on that team. But you're looking at it now, Drew, we're almost at Christmas here, and you're 8 points out. At what point does Ron Hextall say, and we know he's been trying to get rid of LeCavalier in that contract, but at what time do you say, okay, let's get rid of a couple guys? They've got some decent players coming up in the system, Scott Laughton, Travis Sanheim, who was drafted. We were there in Philly, defenseman. He was cut from the junior team, but they've got some prospects in the system, but at what point do you say, we got to get rid of some of these bad contracts? Well, there's some bad contracts.
How do you get rid of them, though? And the other question, the other thing I would mention is the depth up front isn't what it once was.
No. It isn't.
How do you get rid of the contracts? How many bad contracts do you have in the books? We were going over it before the show.
Lots.
There's probably six or seven bad contracts.
Well, the Cavalier contract is untradeable.
Untradeable, I agree.
I mean, the RJ Umberger contract looks pretty bad.
Yeah, and then they were trying to cut down on the term with the Hartnell, because Hartnell's a better player, but he's not as fast, and you're trying to shore up get some money out of that.
I still think a team tries to... That might, especially if salary's eaten, I could see a team getting LeCavalier.
I can't. Not for that amount of money. I don't know if that. I mean, they don't have that much money that they can afford to hold on to, because they're right up against. They're the number one team against the salary cap in the league. I mean, Philly spends the most money against the cap as any team in the league.
I mean, you give Ed Snyder credit for spending money.
Yeah, not wisely.
Fair enough. Is he the one responsible for it? Well, maybe Brisgulov he was, but I mean, or is that Paul Holmgren, who's not in charge anymore? It's not an easy gig there.
Andrew McDonald, that's a bad contract right now.
Yes.
$5 million a year for the next 5 years on the back end. I mean, Nicholas Grossman, bad contract.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Shen, that's a bad contract.
Mm-hmm.
Braden Coburn, you can probably...
That's been a very good value contract, Braden Coburn.
You say it is or isn't?
It is, yeah. That's a good
value. Yeah, I would have to agree with Rich. I mean, maybe Coburn has fallen off a little bit and he's had injury issues, but I wouldn't say that's a bad contract.
He's been good.
But all the other ones, Drew, that you mentioned are bad contracts.
What's Matt Reed giving you for $3.6 million a year?
Well, Matt Reed's a good player.
And you can shoot it, Drew, and you know, he's a different style of player than some of the guys that we've done in that contract. You know, 3.6, do they jump the gun maybe a little bit term-wise? Sure, but they're getting, I mean... You know, there are bad contracts on the books here, especially in the back end. That's where we should focus. Truth be told, Wayne Simmons at 3.9 steal, right?
Yeah.
Voracek at 4.25 steal.
Sure.
So, I mean, they get value up front, which is why they're able to score. Now, Giroux is getting paid probably market value now at 8.2, but they still have Couturier at 1.75 here for the next 2 years, right? So
Couturier is a keeper. I mean, he might be the future captain of the team. He's a great defensive forward.
Maybe. I know, we know that Frank spoke about him last time he was on the show. As he mentioned, Scott Laughton, he's got into a few games this year, and he's, you know, kind of, the Flyers can draft. The problem is in the back end. I know they drafted Sam Marin 2 years ago now, so.
Gostis Behier is coming up.
Yeah, but can these guys step in and have an immediate impact? And I haven't seen them play, so I can't say that. I can say that the guys who I've seen play on the back end of their squad are not difference makers, and a lot of them are paid like they are.
The Flyers got to turn it around, or it'll be a lost year.
Let's head to break. We'll bring in Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News to talk more about... Pardon me?
Easy for you to say,
yeah.
Thank you.
From the Philadelphia Daily News to talk more about the Flyers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Philadelphia Daily News, Frank Saravelli. Frank, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Frank, we were talking about the Flyers and their struggles so far this season, 11-14-6 on the year. You know, is this a team that's potentially about to be blown up in terms of the roster?
Well, I would say yes if it was possible if there were pieces on this team that teams were dying to have. And I think there are a few guys that teams would be interested in, but those are the exact guys that Ron Hextall would like to keep. This team really needs to shake up in terms of, some of the older pieces that they have, guys that have been here for a little while. But those are some of the guys that, like I said, have contracts that make it really prohibitive to get rid of them.
So what's his next step then, Frank? I mean, are we looking at him taking a look at Craig Berube as coach? I mean, we've seen the coaching carousel in Philly so often. I mean, there's only so many defensemen and goaltending, goaltenders that this guy can use, Berube, behind the bench before he looks and says, what have I got here?
You would think that'd be the case, but I think there's actually some patience here with Hextall. I think that's a little bit of the difference between him and maybe Paul Holmgren. And I think really the game plan for this team is to wait it out. I think they're interested more in 2 years down the road when they can finally get their defensive prospect here. They've really gone heavy in the draft defensively the last few years. The Manitoba boy, Travis Sanheim, is the guy that they picked up in the first round last year. He's a guy, and along with Sam Moran, who recently made the World Junior team in Canada, those are guys that this team is looking for 2 years, maybe 3 years down the line to really take over. They have an electric prospect named Shane Gostisbehere there in the AHL who actually tore his ACL earlier this season. I think those are the players that this team is looking for to make an impact, not necessarily through a trade or firing the coach. And I think until then, it's just going to be a pretty unpleasant and painful year for the Flyers and their fans.
Frank, when you look at Vincent LeCavalier, he's only played 17 games for the Flyers this year. Are the Flyers still trying to move him? Would they move him if they could?
They would absolutely move him if they could. I think he would also certainly try and be moved if he could. It's just he signed a 5-year deal with this team, and he's only in the second year of it, and it's a pretty prohibitive cap number at $4.5 million. And he's just a hard guy to move based on the production that he's had. He's a guy that is certainly not playing the style of game that this league is moving towards, fast, puck moving. He's a guy that's, a little bit slower at this point in his career. He's still got a great shot, but he has a ton of experience, of course. But for a guy that's making, $10.7 million this year when you include his buyout from the Lightning, he's certainly not performing up to that standard. And when you have multiple years left to fill for a team, it becomes a pretty tough guy to try and acquire, even if you're not giving up a lot to get him and the Flyers are paying part of it. It's just that number on the salary cap that really hurts.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News talking about the Flyers ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow evening. Frank, the brightest spot for the Flyers this year has to be Jakub Voracek, right at the top of the NHL in terms of points so far. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent after next year, making $4.25 million this year and next. Have the Flyers begun to consider us contract extension for Voracek? Have they begun to talk to him at all?
Well, no. I mean, he can't sign his deal until some point next after this season, so it would be sometime in the summer, so probably not even worth discussing at this point, just because also he's never performed quite at this level before, so I mean, it kind of goes both ways where you can try and negotiate this summer and sign him to a deal that's obviously going to be a pretty significant increase for him based on this season, or you can try and maybe wait a little bit and get him for a cheaper number at some point next year if he doesn't start at the same level that he's played at this season. But there's always the risk to that if he does start off really well and keeps playing at this level that you're going to need to pay him even more than perhaps you could have this summer. So that's going to be something for Ron to consider. You know, personally, I would wait until next year. Obviously, he's been a great player playing alongside Drew this season. He's been extremely consistent, but, you know, this hasn't been the story throughout his career so far. He's 26 years old, and he's a guy that, you know, has had a few down spots in his career before, to the point where the Blue Jackets risked letting him go to the Flyers in that Jeff Carter trade, even though he's a guy that put up 50 points in his second year in the league. So his play has dropped off before. If I'm Ron Hextall, I'd wait it out. But, you know, it's certainly an interesting discussion.
Frank, along the same lines, if Voracek keeps it going next season, and, you know, he'll obviously warrant a big contract extension with a big number, how do the Flyers fit that under the salary cap?
Well, the thing that you have to look at is how much is the salary cap increasing? And also the other part of that is, look at all the contracts that they'd be losing 2 years from now when that number would finally kick in. I think it's really, there's quite a few guys that are off that list. I think Luke Shen is up by then, Nick mm-hmm. Roseman, Braden Coburn as well. So those are a few of the guys that would be off. Then they have pretty significant numbers as well.
I know you got to run here, Frank. So just, you mentioned Braden Coburn. We'll let you go after this one. What's the situation with him? You know, 4.5 for this year and next year. I think an asset that would have value on the market amongst many assets on the team that probably don't. How do you see that figuring itself out?
Well, he's a guy that the Flyers wanted to move, I think, last summer and maybe even the summer before that. And I think the thing that drives both myself, the team, and probably all the fans in Philadelphia is he's a guy that has all of the physical traits and abilities, and he's put it all together before for periods of time. I mean, he's had some tremendous playoff runs for this team where he's really been their best defenseman at times. And then you see him in some games and you talk to scouts and they'll tell you that he's the worst player on the ice for both teams. And it's incredible to see his drop off. And I think it's all mental for him. He's a guy that could be a really solid number two defenseman in this league if he could put it all together in his head. And I just think that he really lacks the confidence to be able to do that. So, until he can straighten that out, then I think the Flyers are going to have to hang on to him.
Frank, we know you have to run, so we'll save our Rob Zepp question for next time we talk to you.
All right, great. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Thanks very much, Frank. That's Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News joining us in Toronto, where the Flyers and the Leafs will play tonight before the Flyers fly into Winnipeg. 8 p.m. puck drop tomorrow evening here on TSN 1290 and on TSN 3. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News for joining us. In case you missed any of that, it's available for download on iTunes on TSN1290.ca and, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Jets currently reside in a playoff spot in the ultra-competitive Central Division and Western Conference. 33 games played, 40 points. Right now, they're 2 points behind guaranteeing themselves a spot by finishing in the top three in their division. Nashville with 42 points, but 3 games in hand on the Jets. But right now, they are relatively firmly in a playoff spot, but it's the games in hand that the Minnesota Wild have on the Jets that right now are going to be a bit of the issue. The Wild are 6 points behind the Jets for a playoff spot. And they have 3 games in hand, which makes the 2 games upcoming right after Christmas, the home and home series between the Jets and the Wild, oh so crucial.
Yeah, and I think you're really going to see a 7-team race for those last 4 playoff spots. That's really how I'm looking at it. I have really, to me, there's a separation after the first 3 teams there, and those teams obviously being the teams that are in the top 3 seeds, Anaheim, Chicago, and St. Louis. And, you know, Nashville surprised many by really being this good so far. And you could probably throw in Calgary as well, even though they've lost 7 games in a row here. But to me, you know, even it's crazy to think that Dallas and Colorado are almost out of the playoff race right now. They're really going to have to put a stretch together. But to me, you're looking for the Jets. And it's unbelievable that we're talking with the Jets being a couple points above the, well, tied right now with the LA Kings, but the, sorry, no, a couple points ahead of the LA Kings, sorry. But to me, it's a race there for those spots. And really, if you look at the end of the season, I wouldn't be surprised if those standings are completely different with a team like the LA Kings or even the Sharks, you know, in those four and five spots. So for me, though, if you're looking at a team, Drew, that's not currently in a playoff spot, and this is going to change, it's completely fluid, to me, it has to be the Minnesota Wild there. And you mentioned the games in hand, and those are huge. The Jets have played a lot of games, and the Wild, I think, have played the fewest games in the NHL. But you're looking at a situation where the Minnesota Wild, their top two centers, Mikael Granlund and Mikko Koivu, haven't been putting the puck in the net. You've got a lot of issues there. Vanek only has four goals. I think this is a team that's still coming together offensively. Still a very good defensive team. But to me, the Calgary Flames, like, they're a really good team, but to me, you're kind of seeing how a young team that has early season success now is kind of, they've kind of, that formula that was working for them earlier, they're having their first adversity as a young group. So to me, the Calgary Flames, I think they've done a nice job here to kind of hang around. But to me, it's the Wild and the Kings right now that are the biggest threats. And the Kings are in a playoff spot, obviously. But to me, if you're looking at if the Jets fall out of a playoff spot, what team is going to overtake them? I think it's a clear cut. And I'm not, and this is no offense to the Calgary Flames. I just think the Minnesota Wild, really, this is the time of year, especially last year, as Rich mentioned, they started to really get going around December.
The Wild Jets home and home is, to me, reminiscent of that back-to-back the Jets and the Washington Capitals played at the MTS Center a couple of years ago. The Jets were in a playoff spot at that point in time. Different time in the season, yeah. A couple months earlier. But the Capitals were just behind the Jets in the standings at that point, and they came into MTS Center, and they swept both those games handily, and that was sort of the beginning of the end for the Jets and their playoff dreams that year. You look at this upcoming week after tomorrow night against Philly. You have the Blackhawks on Tuesday, then the Christmas break, and then you got two games against the Wild. I mean, those are three very important divisional games that the Jets have to succeed in.
You also play the Islanders after, Drew, and I think what you're seeing there is three really fast teams. And that will be an interesting to see how the defense is able to match up against the speed of these three teams after Philadelphia. Because Chicago can skate. They're the best of those three teams. The Islanders can skate too, and so can Minnesota. So how does this team now, with the defense back there that is certainly not the sturdiest and didn't really face too much speed last night, fare against the squads who can quickly transition against you? That is going to be very important to watch. You talk about getting back to the question originally, who is the team that the Jets ought to be most scared of? It is Minnesota. Now, Minnesota has three games in hand, and it's 6 points back. Minnesota's not playing at 100% clip. So right now, the Jets are obviously an advantage there, regardless of the games in hand. The Minnesota is a better team than Calgary, certainly more talented than Calgary. Dallas is pretty far back. I think Minnesota's the biggest threat. You know, you might expect Vancouver and Nashville to take steps back, possibly. San Jose is kind of put into gear here, although they have the same amount of points as the Jets. Vancouver still has a lot of talent on that squad, and I think when you look at Nashville, I mean, Pekka Rinne, right? I mean, is he going to go through a slump? Is that defense going to go through a slump?
Nashville's, I mean, I was looking at their numbers. They've given up 59 goals in 30 games. That's less than two goals a game. It's an incredible
It's also number one in the league.
Yeah.
It's number one in the league. It's the fact that you can still play in a more open style. They've scored 81 goals and allowed 59. It's not like they've scored 62.
Right.
That's a big difference. And Pekka Rinne, you're able to leave him on an island, and he's that good. So I don't see them falling. They might fall back a bit, but he's going to keep them, I think. Certainly, if you look at it right now, I realize that they're only 6 points up on the next team, but they have the next team in the playoff race, which would be Calgary, but you have to realize that they have four games at hand on them.
Yeah.
So I think the threat is Minnesota. And the threat's Minnesota because, talent-wise, in my opinion, they're the best team that's not in the playoffs right now. Now, do they have to get their goaltending shored up? Well, we're going to ask Mike Greenlay about that later in the show. Darcy Kemper, Nicholas Backstrom haven't been as good maybe as they anticipated, or they had hoped. Maybe not anticipated, but had hoped. You have a talented squad that can, maybe not the most physical team up front. You could use a little more physicality, but with the squad they have on paper, they should certainly be in a playoff spot.
Absolutely, they should be. We're talking about the NHL standings right now and the Jets and how it relates to the playoff race, which, you know, entering into 2015 in a couple of weeks, certainly will begin to heat up. You know, that Vancouver was, you know, started the season like gangbusters, and they've sort of struggled in the last, you know, 10 games or so, 4-5-1, so under 500 in their last 10 games. So that might be a team that if they continue to struggle, do they fall back? Is that a team where, you know, maybe LA and the Jets keep going and Minnesota gets it going and maybe Vancouver falls off and all of a sudden the Central Division puts five teams into the playoffs like they did last season?
It's going to be hard for the Jets to sustain this with this defense. So, I mean, I'm already surprised they've been able to last this long. I mean, with this defense for the entire month of January and the remainder of December, which isn't an easy schedule, the remainder of December, and then the entire month of January, if that's, I mean, maybe Enstrom comes back before then, but the other three guys are out till February.
Well, no, but, Enstrom is supposed to be at the sort of the beginning of January. Bogosian was sort of the middle of January, and then Trouba and Stewart were, you know, or Trouba really, because I mean Stewart is replaceable.
But I mean he's still better than the guy that they're putting out there.
Is he better than Jay Harrison?
Well, he's different than Jay Harrison and what he brings to the table. Is he better than Jay Harrison? Yeah, I think he's a little bit better than Jay Harrison, but I don't think there's a, you know, a significant gap there, Drew, but I do agree that with you that obviously the other guys are more important. I think Stewart still is important in terms of what he brings to the table and in the locker room and that stability and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, if Enstrom's able to come back, say, at the beginning of January, that January 3rd game against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm just speculating based on the...
I think that's wishful thinking.
Well, that's the timeline that was given by,
Paul Maurice. It's very ambiguous.
I don't know if he'll be back by then, Drew.
I know, but he said he's going to start skating at the beginning of January. So, okay. I mean, does that mean he's immediately back in the lineup? Who knows? Is he skating and he's not game ready for another 2 weeks? I don't know. We're just going based on the, you know, the elusive quotes provided by every NHL coach at this point in time. If you can be successful in these three games against the Wild and the Blackhawks, but if you happen to lose to the Islanders and the Flyers, let's say tomorrow night, certainly not the end of the world if you can take care of business with your Central Division games. And that's where the Jets struggled so severely last year and probably cost themselves a playoff spot because they couldn't get it going in their division.
Oh, absolutely. That's the biggest difference for me. Well, the defensive play obviously is as well, but the Jets have been good in their own division this year. They've taken care of business against the Avalanche. They've taken care of business against the Dallas Stars. Hey, they've even beaten the Chicago Blackhawks this year. But it's not going to get easier for the Jets, and I'm not, you know, saying that in a negative way. You got to give the Jets credit, starting with the coaching staff, that they've played this well so far.
And they're
tied for fifth in the Western Conference, but you look at, you know, the remaining five games here, and four of those five games are going to be really hard games, and that's, you know, no offense to the Philadelphia Flyers. The Flyers could very well give the Jets a run for their money tomorrow night at the MTS Center. But just saying, like, the Blackhawks and the Wild, and the Wild know that they have to catch the Jets. We know the Wild and Jets, they have a bit of a rivalry going on here. So it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy for the rest of the season. Jets are going to have to grind out wins, especially when your top four defensemen are all out.
There aren't that many good teams in the league either. I mean, I've said it. I think there's probably 6-7 good teams, really good teams. There's six probably just awful teams, and then, you know, 20 or so, 18 to 20 teams that are all the same to me. And the Jets are in that group, to be honest with you. They're in the middle group, so if you can continue to play a structured game and not make many errors, protect your, you know, protect the house, as they say, in front of the net, you can beat a lot of those teams. I don't think you can beat any of those top 6-7 teams in a series, but, hey, you don't know. Maybe you chance and don't play them. Who knows what happens?
Since that opening stretch to the season where they really struggled coming out of the gate, I don't think the Jets have gone more than one game, maybe two at most, without earning at least a point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key to success, and that's the key to getting into the playoffs.
It's a grind. It really is.
2-1, 3-2 every game, right?
Yesterday's win was a complete grind. It was everybody blocking shots, keeping the shots to the outside, anything that you need to do, playing a simple game.
That's
all it was. They went into a defensive shell in the third period, and Boston didn't have anything going, and that's a lot of the Jets' wins have come that way.
If you're trying to sell the game to a fan, you're not showing him or her last night's game.
No.
I mean, it's not fun to watch, but it's getting the job done, and they don't care. I've said this many times on the show, they don't care, and they shouldn't care if they're trying to win. I mean, the job is a results-based business. I thought the Jets played well in the first period. Boston didn't play. I mean, you're not looking at this is. We're going to ask Brad True Living a little bit about this, but this is the cap world, guys. I mean, every team has flaws. Now you're not looking at. Sometimes I have to go. Okay, you know, look at this Jets squad in the big picture, and how good is this team? Well, I don't think they're very good, but relative to everybody else,
they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, because there's nobody's really that good. I mean, look at it. Look at the squad around the league. Look at the Eastern Conference. Even the Western Conference. Arizona's awful.
Yeah.
Edmonton is awful. Dallas got problems. Calgary's exceeded expectations. I mean, Vancouver and San Jose, they've certainly had flaws. They're second and third of their own division. So every team really has flaws except for one or two.
Well, I mean, you saw there's only so many games a year that are really, you know, games between championship teams. That game on Thursday, was it Thursday night where St. Louis and L.A. played each other?
Yeah.
6-4. That's a game between two
level.
Heavyweight yeah. teams
different
level. In the Western. And it's a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right.
But most games aren't that.
You're right. Most games are teams that are in the mushy middle where on any given night, one team's going to beat another if they execute their system to a slightly better degree
and
than the team they're playing against.
And the Jets are doing that better than other teams right now.
Yeah. I mean, which goes back to what you were saying, I think, right off the start of the show about Paul Maurice being a legitimate Jack Adams contender for the coach of the year right now.
It's all buy-in, and they've bought in. So, yeah.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Calgary Flames general manager Brad Treliving is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in the studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Chris sent me a note informing me that he is correct. The last time the Jets lost two games in a row without earning any points was against Detroit and St. Louis earlier in November. So that's the last time. But for the most part, it has been very few and far between this season where the Jets have gone any period of time without at least earning 1 point. Waiting on Calgary Flames general manager Brad Treliving. He's going to be joining us to talk about the contract extension he handed out to Flames head coach Bob Hartley earlier this week. We've had Brad on a couple years ago when I believe on NHL Midweek. We had him on when he was still the assistant general manager with the Arizona Coyotes, the Phoenix Coyotes at that point in time. So pleased to talk to Brad coming up momentarily here on the program. And in the final hour, we're going to be joined by Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst. So we'll talk more about the Wild ahead of the Jets Wild back-to-back that's happening just after Christmas. You know, what about the Bob Hartley extension? We talked about it a bit on Wednesday. We'll talk a little bit more now. You know, why has he been so successful in Calgary, to your mind?
Well, you mentioned expectations, Drew. I think that's a factor. I think a factor at the beginning was the comfort level with Jay Feaster. I think that's translated with success, his comfort level with the other management around him. I do think also it's one of those things where he comes into this job and he says, this might be my last crack at the NHL. And I got to be a little bit more flexible than maybe I used to be. And I have to make sure I've changed with the times. And this is, you know, when a guy doesn't take it for granted that he has this chance, I'm not saying every coach does, but some probably do. I think it leads to better performance, and I think that's translated for him into a better team performance, and certainly it's not mutually exclusive team performance and his performance.
Yeah, I agree with you, Richie, and I think, you know, you look at the youth on the Calgary Flames, and they were without the services mm-hmm. of Sam Bennett, who was a top pick at the draft in Philadelphia, but Bob Hartley's also put a lot of confidence in his young players, and yes. out of training camp, you know, he said he liked what Josh Juris was doing, a player who was fairly unknown before the season started. Everyone knew about Johnny Gaudreau, a player who I think is just a fantastic player, a fantastic offensive player, and he's very young, and I think he's only going to get better. But he's put a lot of confidence in his young players. And, you know, the Calgary Flames this year, you know, Richie, you mentioned the expectations for the Calgary Flames, and they've already surpass them. You look at the contrast between the Calgary Flames mm-hmm. and then their provincial neighbors, the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, the Calgary Flames, they are a hard team to play against. They play a very fast game, and they're a skilled team. And, you know, Yuri Hudler has been excellent this year for the Calgary Flames. Mark Giordano, we've talked about this over the last few weeks, months, really. He's got to be a Norris Trophy candidate for the Calgary Flames. And, you know, they are in a position, unfortunately, that they've lost 7 games in a row here, and they've fallen a little bit out of the playoff spot. But I don't think they're going to fade away. I still think they'll be a competitive team and they'll stick around a little bit. I don't know if they you know, as the season progresses with this young team, if they're going to be able to eventually get into the playoffs. But you know, Hartley's done a great job with the youth there.
I don't think they're going to be in the playoff races per se, but I think every game you're going to play against them, you're going to know that you played a game. They're not going to roll over for any of the games.
That's true. I also think it's easier for a younger team now to be out of the playoffs. Long-term development-wise, that expectations now are that they're out. They're trying to play their way in as opposed to being in and trying to keep their way in.
Yeah.
Can take a little more chances. I mean, their expectations are already curbed now based on the fact that they've lost seven in a row. In terms of the long-term development of the squad, I know I realize you guys like Giordano aren't getting any younger, but he's playing great. But the idea is, you know, you're looking long-term building here. And if that's the case, then I think you're okay the position that you're in right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're building blocks in, this success only breeds well for the future. You know, you look at Edmonton, and you can't help but contrast Calgary and Edmonton all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this constant losing that they're experiencing at Edmonton just wears on your young players, and it teaches them, you know, not dissimilar to the Atlanta Thrashers in that, you know, you bring in these young players, all they know is losing, really.
Yep, that's fair.
And it just breeds resentment, and it breeds content with losing. And it's, you know, well, we played hard, but we lost. You know, in Calgary, success and winning games tastes so much better. I like this feeling a hell of a lot more. I'm only going to like it more and more as the years go by and as I continue to develop. I only want to win. I don't want to even consider losing.
That's the idea also that the veteran influence is in that squad. We talk about Giordano. I mean, like, is he in his prime years right now? Well, he's playing like he's in his prime. And the veteran influence of him playing on different teams and as he, Dennis Wyman, Chris Russell, they've played, you know, Ken Hitchcock, they've played for different coaches before. And they have expectations that they bring into that locker room as well. Jonas Hiller, been to the playoffs. So when you have a veteran influence amongst young players, I think that calms everything down. Whereas in Edmonton, I think it's the young players running the show, as opposed to in Calgary, it's the veterans running the show with the young players being burdened with some responsibility, but not a ton of responsibility. There's not too much of a burden there. And I think that goes to organizational structure and having a plan. I think a lot of the teams that, you know, you just... People don't remember, even with Sidney Crosby's first year in the National Hockey League, and sure, he was a dynamic player, dominant, but remember who was there still? Mario Lemieux. Who took all the attention, right? Sure. And that's the thing. I mean, that's people don't understand that. I mean, when you look at some of the pressure that these teams face, having young players thrown out to the media all the time is very difficult to handle. And there's a lot of pressure.
They've never seen that before. That's right. You know, it like a player like Johnny Gaudreau, you know, he great player and was the Hobey Baker winner last year. And, you know, but they're not used to this level playing in a Canadian market, having to answer questions before practice, after games, before games, having the grind of an NHL season. You don't see that. I mean, if you're coming from the Canadian Hockey League, Canadian Junior Hockey League, you see that to a certain degree and you're used to that. But, you know, it's not at the same level, same scope. And not even just in Canadian markets. I mean, I think that's overblown sometimes.
Yep.
In any market, maybe with the exception of some markets where, you know, it's a little bit easier. And, you know, I think this team has done a really nice job. And I think, you know, talking about, you know, the whether they'll or not they'll be a playoff team, I think you can see where they're going here. And, you know, the locked up TJ Brody, who's fairly young, and, you know, you can see Mark Giordano is going to be the cornerstone of that defense for many years to come. So you can kind of see where this team is going. And you didn't see that maybe a couple of years ago when the Flames, you know, started to trade off Jay Bomeister and they got rid of Jerome Iginla and Mike Camilleri left in free agency. Now you can kind of see where this team is going. Sam Bennett, Sean Monahan. You got to give the scouts, the management, a lot of credit here for rebuilding this team, basically Richie on the fly.
You know, I think you can't overstate the importance of was getting a veteran goaltender to solidify that position.
Yeah, that too, Drew.
You know, Brad Treliving got the job, I believe, in April of this past year, and it seemed like his, you know, number one goal in the offseason was to get a goaltender, and he did. He goes out and gets Jonas Hiller on that 3-year deal, and all of a sudden, everything looks better on that back end, and everything looks better with those young players.
Jim Benning did the same thing.
Sure. Did the same thing in Vancouver as well. We're getting in Ryan Miller.
Less youth, and to your point, I think that's a factor we've talked about on the show before. Young teams, look at Florida. How much better is Florida now with Roberto Luongo there? The mistakes made by Aaron Ekblad, whoever it is, are covered up if you have a goalie like that.
Mm-hmm. Nobody can score on him in the shootout.
It's like Edmonton. Yeah, it's like Edmonton, though. You know, there's mistakes by the back end. Well, I mean, are they going to be exposed against Fast and Scrivens? Yes, more so than they would be against Luongo. It sounds simple, but it's so true because it speaks to confidence.
Yeah. But it's amazing that, you know, Look, you could spend an entire 3-hour episode of the show talking about the decisions made by the Edmonton Oilers.
But if,
well,
if
we have, but I know. We have, if it's such an obvious solution and it's such an old axiom in sports or in hockey that you need a goaltender to really play your best.
Well, I mean, there was a trend for a while there, Drew, that the goaltenders weren't valued as high, and then it kind of came back. I mean, look at years ago,
sure.
Detroit was, they weren't paying their goaltenders a lot. Look at Philly makes the finals with a mishmash of goaltenders. Right. Chicago doesn't put much into them, and then that kind of came around again.
But you know what? Corey Crawford and Jimmy Howard, and you know, those guys are better than everybody Edmonton's been trotting out there.
That's fair. That's
they may
fair.
Not be paying them a lot.
Well, now they are. But I mean, it seems like the Oilers, I think to that point, the Oilers kind of are behind that curve again. They're reacting as opposed to being proactive. They're now still seeing they can kind of get it on the cheap, when in reality, a lot of these teams with really solid goaltending are paying for it. Look how much Nashville's paying Pekka-Rinne.
Yeah, well, look at what Pekka-Rinne's doing for the Nashville Predators.
Right.
Nobody can score more than 2 goals a game on him. And even 2 goals hasn't been easily achieved.
Lundqvist got paid, even the Longos on the long-term deal, he got paid. All the good goalies got paid.
Yeah. I mean, I think
John and Quick got paid.
It was a momentary blip in reasoning when goaltenders all of a sudden weren't as valuable than it was anything.
Well, I think it speaks to sometimes the ability to analyze goaltending, which I think people, I think it's extremely difficult. And I think people who speak as if it's kind of black and white, I think are a little bit out to lunch on that, to be honest. I think it's hard to tell. But they've been getting better at it. I think with getting better at it, the teams are sure of themselves, are more apt to spend the money on it.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair comment. You know, let's go to break. Not sure what's happened to Brad for a living yet. Hopefully
I think he traded this segment for another segment.
Yeah. What's that?
He traded this segment for another segment.
Right. They're in Vancouver tonight to play the Canucks, so I'm not sure if there's something going on in their game day skate or whatever. Anyways, hopefully we'll bring Brad for living to you at some point during the show this afternoon. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Yeah, having a little Hanukkah party at my house today. I'll be picking up some...
Well, hold on a second. Let's be full disclosure here. It's a potluck.
Yes.
No, Drew's not invited.
No, I'm invited. At least my wife's invited. I assume I'm allowed to come.
Kenny, obviously you're invited.
We'll get security at the front, but it's a potluck. You're supposed to make food, and you're going to Bernstein's and buying latkes and not making food.
As an attendee at this potluck, I actually have to thank Essie for that, because I could do without the case of food poisoning that his cooking would inevitably provide to me.
I'll admit, it's not that I'm not a good cook, because I can make certain things. I'm just lazy.
What are the things you can make?
Chili. Richie knows I brought a chili for the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, it was...
people liked the chili.
Well, I mean, people liked it. Their system didn't like it too much. You know what? I can
make lasagna.
Maybe Dave, Legal Curve, told me you had a funny tweet this week about Chinese food that you're ordering.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think the tweet
was
something like, I've been ordering so much Chinese food from the place down the street that they're starting to call me and asking me what I want for dinner. I guess they don't pay us, so I can't mention it, but I like my breaded veal.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. What are you making for the potluck tonight there, Richie?
Donuts.
Homemade donuts.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah? Are you concerned about the use of grease at all?
No, that's okay, Drew. I'm
the Manitoba restaurant industry?
Well, it's a little bit risky sometimes to make a big vat of grease in your house, because you have to... I've done it once before.
Rich isn't making like donuts for like 1,000 people.
Well, no, but it's just right, because you got the oil, you got it boiling, and there's stuff spraying everywhere.
Yeah, it can be a little. There could be a spark of a grease.
Drew actually doesn't bathe in water; he bathes in oil.
That's true. It's what gives me my nice supple skin. Yeah. This nice oily look that I have.
He doesn't eat vegetables; he just bathes in vegetable oil.
I didn't realize I had Bobby Flay to my left and Guy Fieri to my right.
Speaking of hot oil, let's talk about some coaches who are on the hot seat.
Oh, Drew.
No good?
I mean, they already fired. Oilers fired somebody.
That was a weak transition.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, sorry. Anyways, there's other coaches that are on the hot seat as we approach the new year, and what better way to ring in the new year than to dismiss your coach when you have unrealistic expectations for your team to begin with. You know, one coach you've heard about lately, a lot talked about on being on the hot seat, is Peter DeBoer in New Jersey. Here's Bob McKenzie talking about the possibility that New Jersey might be making a coaching change.
Well, with coaches being fired recently, Paul McClain, Dallas Aikens, we've been hearing for a while that Pete DeBoer might be on thin ice with New Jersey, but every time we hear that, it seems like the team rallies around him. A couple of weeks ago, there was a victory in Toronto where some people thought if the Devils had lost, that DeBoer might have been fired that night. Lots of talk going into last night's game against the Islanders that DeBoer might be on thin ice again. They get the loser point in that one, and Jaromir Jagr, of all people, stepped up with it. A real strong vote of confidence for DeBoer, saying it would be the worst mistake they could possibly make by firing him. One other bit to throw in at the end here. Boston Bruins are going to release Pasternak, the young Czech player, to go to the World Junior Championship. He'd be heading there on the weekend.
So, you know, Pete DeBoer potentially on the chopping block, but that's a very nice quote from Jaromir Jagr to try and keep his job.
I thought it was absolutely a great quote, and the Devils did win yesterday, surprisingly, in a shootout.
Yeah.
They beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-2 in a shootout yesterday, but to me, Peter DeBoer is a great coach. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous to suggest he's on the hot seat. To me, I mean, and Lou Lamoriello, I mean, he's the architect of three Stanley Cup winning teams. But that he has not addressed the holes in this roster, Richie. And we've talked about this before. This Devils team is most likely not making the playoffs this year. They're in 13th or whatever, 12th in the Eastern Conference.
No, they're not that far out of it.
Yeah, but I mean, there's
6 points back.
There's 6 points back. But if you're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers being out of it, I think you have to...
They've played a lot of games, though.
I think, regardless. I think the Devils right now are, let's say, in tight, Richie,
yes.
to make the playoffs. They can still make the playoffs, but they're going to have to go on a run here. And they haven't got a run. I don't even know. Maybe we'll have to check on this. I don't even know if the Devils have won 3 games in a row this year or gone 3 or 4 games with points in a row this year. They've kind of gone one, win one, lose two type of thing the entire year. But this Devils team has huge holes on defense, and there's some defensemen I like there for the future, Eric Jelena and Damon Severson.
Severson's out of the lineup for 4 to 6 weeks now.
He's
their best defenseman.
Well, he is. Well, yeah, I mean, he's been great. I mean, but you have Marek Zidlicky, who I didn't think should have been given a contract. He's just too slow now, and he's your number one defenseman. But, you know, like, good for Scotty Gomez coming back and getting another crack at it here, but you've got a lot of money. You've got a lot of money here, Richie, on forwards and defensemen that aren't very good. Like, you're paying Zubris a lot of money. You're paying Ryan Clough a lot of money. You're paying Michael Ryder a lot of money. And these are very mediocre players.
They're odd. It's an odd mix there. I mean, I had them as a playoff team. It's a veteran team that could get the playoffs. I don't see it long term. I understand. I mean, Severson, I really like. And John, I like his game too. Larson obviously needs to do more. But, I mean, there's some core there in the back end.
He's in the AHL right now, by the way.
That you didn't see before. And Schneider. So I can kind of see a little bit more of what they're doing. But up front, just a mishmash of old players. And Ryan Clough's had, guys, how many concussions has Ryan Clough had?
Lots.
So anyhow, Pete DeBoer, back to the point of the segment, Drew, you mentioned DeBoer. I like DeBoer. I like the systems that he plays. I like the structure of his team. I think they're extremely well prepared. If I were another team and I saw Pete DeBoer available, you know, I might look to hire him. So I don't think Lou Lamoriello should make a change there. You wonder, you look around the league and you say, okay, are there any other teams? You wonder about Arizona here. And Dave Tippett is very well respected. And, you know, Brad Tre Living, obviously, being in Arizona and Phoenix, you know, as the name was before then, he has probably a close relationship with a guy like Dave Tippett. But you look at where Arizona is in the standings now, and it's a results-based business. And I realize, you know, the performance hasn't been what it was in the past years. And 26 points in 31 games, guys, they're completely out of it now. Maybe for a long-term organization, that might be the best thing to get another, you know, get a high pick here. But Ribeiro experiment didn't go well, and they really can't score much. They have 72 goals this year.
They can't defend anything either. They've given up 100.
That's right. So is he possibly on the hot seat?
I think he knows where too many of the bodies might be buried in Phoenix.
What do you mean?
The entire ownership saga, I don't think that they're going to make him the scapegoat because he's been such a loyal soldier.
Yeah, fair enough. And I'm not saying that he ought to be. I'm just saying, you know, that would be the one that you'd wonder about.
Yeah.
Now, Mike Yeo got his extension last year in April. Prior to then, he was kind of on the hot seat. And he took that team through Colorado last year. And I thought he coached quite well against Chicago in the second round. So you'd think that he wouldn't be on the hot seat, but they haven't played to their expectations in Minnesota. And you look to the Eastern Conference, I mean, a lot of these guys are either new coaches who are out of the playoffs right now, or a team, like most of these, you look, the thing when you look at the league, guys, coaches on the hot seat, so many coaches on in the both conferences are in their first or second year.
Yeah, but I don't think that's necessarily giving them a complete job security. I think Craig Berube, if he continues to struggle in Philadelphia, given that he wasn't Ron Hextall's hire, Ron Hextall wasn't GM when Berube was hired, certainly could be. I mean, Philly's never one that doesn't have an itchy trigger finger.
Same thing with Ted Nolan, though.
I mean, yeah,
re-upped by Tim Murray.
Sure, well, same thing with
Bob
Hartley.
But the pressure was there beforehand.
I know, but the expectations are way higher in Philadelphia than they are in Buffalo.
I still think you're also talking about Randy Carlyle being on the hot seat, not necessarily for good reason, but I think just because he doesn't have another year on his contract after this year, Richie. So I think you have to still put him on the hot seat because the Leafs have done a great job here over the last month after those terrible losses. Buffalo was one of them, and who's the other one? They lost those
Tampa? They played against Tampa after whatever it was.
Those two games. And
Nashville. They got killed by
right,
Nashville.
Right, it was Nashville.
He's got 1 year left on his deal, as I think, after this year. It's just that's what they consider to be lame duck now.
Okay, I thought this was the last year.
No, but yeah, I think this is the last year.
Is it?
I'd have to double check. You know, it's
Richie's probably
track.
Right. Richie's
when you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, it doesn't matter. It's just writing a check. You print money. You print money in the basement of the Air Canada.
This is the reason why. I didn't want to make it seem like it was just because of Randy Carlyle's only year left on his contract. Also, because the Toronto Maple Leafs, they got to give them credit here. They've won 8 of their last 10 games, they're playing well here.
Since that debacle at home to Nashville, they've been the hottest team in the NHL.
I think if you don't make the playoffs. And again, it's not a guarantee here. I mean, you got some teams that are chasing them. They're in sixth in the Eastern Conference, but we saw them lose 12 of their last 14 games last year. I think if the Leafs don't make the playoffs, I think there's a chance that they do make a coaching change.
Sixth best goal differential in the league. I mean, I don't think it's a problem.
No, I agree with you. I'm not saying I think he should be on the hot seat. I just think, you know, we're saying who is on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? The Toronto Maple Leafs, what they've been doing as of late is really...
It just shows you, though. I mean, I don't think the Leafs are that good. So, I mean, to me, I look at the whole league, and again, it goes back to that few teams are good, few teams are terrible, and everybody else is in the middle.
Well, the Leafs have one of the best top lines in the league. I mean, you got to give them credit, even though they might not be that great on the defensive side. And, you know, Joffrey Lupul's come back. Kadri's had a good, second quarter of the season. It's still a team on defense that has issues, but Jonathan Bernier has really covered them up. James Reimer's been good, too. But, you know, it's a team that definitely, you know, is not going to coast into the playoffs. They're going to have to battle. But, I mean, if they're scoring at the club, I mean, they're scoring, you know, what is it? Lately, it seems like 4 goals a game.
Yeah, so. They're the highest scoring team in the NHL. I mean, or pardon me, Tampa Bay has scored 2 more goals than the Leafs have, but they've also played 2 more games. So on a per-game basis, Leafs are the highest scoring team in the NHL.
This also speaks to expectations. Everybody's the same. Everybody expects to be in that, you know, top 15, even though the difference between the 10th and the 20th team is minimal at best.
You're right.
Look, the 10th best goal differential team is San Jose, +9, and the 20th is Boston, -3. Is there really a discernible difference between Boston and San Jose? I mean, style play differently and all that stuff, but to be honest, guys, seriously.
No.
I'm just talking goal differential, but the idea is, like, this is what I'm talking about. These teams are all the same.
Oh, that's the parity that the NHL has been seeking for so long. They finally got it.
You just get it's similar to the NFL that the top quality teams always are going to have holes, even the best teams because of the cap. That's why.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. I mean, it goes back to, you know, how easy is it to change your roster? Generally speaking, not that easy.
Right. I think the NHL GMs were hesitant to do anything.
Well, like you were saying about
Eric DeHatch wrote a great article about it, talking about how they're worried to make a change just to make a change now because they're worried about getting fleeced because there's so little movement in the NHL now that you can keep your job for so long without doing much. How many GMs get fired annually? We're talking about GMs in the hot seat right now. Can name more than a few GMs who would probably deserve to be in the hot seat over the coaches we just mentioned.
Sure.
But remember, they're the ones giving them these bad teams. Like, Don Maloney's had a really nice job in Arizona, but should Dave Tippett be the one responsible for Don Maloney not giving him much scoring and Mike Smith having that big contract and not performing? No. Again, I mean, this is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I don't think I don't think you're going to see any changes in Arizona. I just think that those
guys... You're saying they don't want to eat the money anyways.
They don't want to eat the money, one. And two, I think those guys have been such loyal soldiers.
And they've done an overall really good job. Again, and I'm not calling for anybody's job here. I think most teams, if not all of them, are too quick to make moves.
to be honest. But
well, it's a relatively easy and relatively inexpensive way to make a change, quote unquote. You know, what's it cost? It cost you a couple $1 million.
You probably got two coaching changes in you if you're a GM. That's what I'd say.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Two. So you have three coaches through your tenure.
Yeah, that's generally the rule of thumb. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the KHL and the financial struggles the league is facing. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.